Sisky. When you were alive, you were an utter disgrace to mankind. A lazy, slovenly, ill-mannered whore. Now that you're a dog, the only thing that improves is your breath.
Hello and welcome to the podcast that, through the magic of YouTube, dives deep into television history that never was or will be. Joining me tonight, as always, is Joe.
Hey.
And in our third chair, we have our new comedy expert, Jason.
Howdy.
Jason's going to be letting us know when things are funny or not.
I have a scale.
And tonight, we're going to be doing a double cop dog feature. We had two pilots that we really wanted to do. One was kind of short, and then the other one is a normal length. I guess the first one would be more of like a warm-up.
Yeah, it's a little teaser.
Yeah, a little
amuse-bouche.
Roger Rabbit cartoon. So we're going to start with
Dog Relief. Where are you coming from? Dog Relief. Nobody knows who you are.
What did you guys think of the Dog Police?
I kind of thought it would have worked better if it was a cartoon and it was for children. Like,
yeah.
It was really silly. Obviously, I know it's just a pilot, but there's a lot of questions that I had in my head after it ended.
It's funny that you'd say that, because it was actually supposed to be a cartoon originally.
Oh, really?
They should have went that route.
Yeah, absolutely. The costumes, the masks are absolutely horrifying.
They look like real dogs, but they don't move. There's no articulation. So like the mouths don't move, which is really disturbing.
Yeah, they just kind of flop. They're very floppy.
Another thing I noticed is that it's just their heads. If you see the kid in the intro, he's wearing shorts and he's got like human legs.
He's got
and
regular
also
legs.
The girl cop is wearing a skirt and has regular legs. So once you catch that, it kind of makes you think, well, now you can't do an episode in Miami, right, where it's really hot, you know,
like, takes you out.
Like, how do you do that?
It destroys the magic. So this idea was actually a music video. I'm not sure if you guys got to see that, the original music video for the Dog Police.
Absolutely.
Yep. Those dogs look much scarier in the music video than they do on the pilot. They don't actually look like dogs.
The absolute nightmare fuel.
Okay, so here's the story. Around 1981 in Memphis, Tennessee, the Tony Thomas Trio are recording in a studio late at night, and they're just, you know, kind of fucking around. Normally, they're a standard fare jazz band, but they were inspired by Devo.
Are we not this?
Which was brand new at the time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And they're kind of dicking around with some new wave stuff, supposedly jamming on the Spider-Man theme. And for whatever reason, someone started singing
Dog Police, where are you coming from? Dog Police, nobody knows who you are.
And this woke up the studio engineer, and he was blown away. Loved it. And so he shows this to the owner of the studio, and they love it. And they offered to record an album for free and pay for a music video.
That's back when cocaine ran every major entertainment industry.
I looked up the company that put out the LP, and they're just kind of a small record business. So maybe they thought this was their way to break into the big time. So they cut an 11-track LP, and then they shot the insane music video. And the video is basically the band performing in all their glasses and spandex glory with synths and guitars. And it cuts back and forth between the song's narrative about a man taking a dog woman on a date and the aforementioned who are literal dogs in trench coats showing up to arrest her. And herein lies the problem. It's basically moron humor. The
dog
arrest women for being ugly.
Wow. The only thing I really pulled from it was that some of the costumes kind of look like they were the caveman Geico guys.
Oh my God.
I forgot about the caveman guys.
Seriously, we apologize. We had no idea you guys were still around.
Yeah, next time maybe do a little research.
It kind of felt like there was some kind of influence there.
Wasn't there a caveman pilot?
It actually had a whole season in 2007.
A full season?
Well, and then they're not eligible for this podcast, so never mind.
Next time.
So these musicians found themselves in a really awkward place because they're serious jazz musicians, and now they're having to dress up in these really uncomfortable rubber masks. And to their horror, the album actually kind of starts picking up and getting popular. It was played a lot on MTV's Basement Tapes. Mm-hmm. Weird Al played another one of their music videos. I think it's just called 1-800 on his Al TV special. Being played on Fright Nights on USA, and they started panicking. They tried to get out of all the shows that they were booked for. They even got their friends to show up and pretend to be them for one of the things they booked. But luckily, a major record deal never materialized, and it was basically forgotten. So the lead singer is now the head of the commercial music department at the University of Memphis, and he says that he uses it as a teachable moment for his students. He said, my whole life, I was trying to be a serious musician, and now this is the only thing I'm remembered for.
The two songs I can find are Dog Police and 1-800. So are those the only two songs that this band came out with? Because I could not find anything more.
They recorded an entire 11-track LP, and it was actually re-released in 2019. It looks like Toxic Toast Records. But the Tony Thomas Trio, they're still around and playing fairly regularly in Memphis. This is just something that they've wanted forgotten. And unfortunately, you know, now that we have the internet.
Yeah, nothing is forgotten.
Back in my college radio days, I used to play this track on my post-punk and new wave show fairly regularly. But I had no idea that there was a TV show. It was a mind-bending experience for me. I saw the name Dog Police, and then I was like, there's no way they're related. And then the theme song starts. Dog Police, they're writing everyone, Dog Police. And I was like, oh my God, it's the same song. Like, I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, that is weird to have a history with something so obscure and strange, and to just have your entire perception of it just warped in an instant by Adam Sandler.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
So cut to 10 years later, and NBC called them wanting to make a cartoon out of Dog Police. They couldn't believe it. The guy said he spit his coffee out. Because they were thinking, like, you know, they make a cartoon about it, they're going to make a ton of money off of royalties, right?
Yeah, and toys.
Merchandise.
And toys, yeah. And t-shirts. So the cartoon obviously never happened, but what we do have is this 8-minute test pilot. And it's really just 2.5 scenes in a theme song. The clip on YouTube, it's been up for 12 years. It has 63,000 views. And for some reason, it has a link to melslife.com at the bottom.
I noticed that too.
Yeah. I went to it. There's nothing there. It's just a bunch of Chinese text and a picture of a fan.
Yeah, I actually looked at archive.org to see what was going on melslife.com on December 24th, 2008, when this was uploaded.
Oh.
And that's as far as I got. Mel's Life seems to have been a shitty Yahoo wannabe loosely based around healthy living.
Weird. Weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. And all the other videos on this YouTube channel are like weird ads, like clips of movies and stuff that they've just kind of like stuck Mel's Life into, like on the heads of people. It's a complete mystery. If any of our listeners want to dig deeper and tell us why Mel's Life was interested in Dog Police, I would love to know. So send us an email.
One of history's great mysteries.
I went pretty broad with my research, and I went to IMDb, and I found two credited actors, obviously Adam Sandler and Jeremy Piven, and one review that is really funny, and I'd like to read it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Here's the quote. What more need I say? Dogs plus police. My night made. Bring tissues. The ending is a real tearjerker. If your significant other doesn't like this masterpiece, I personally give you permission to leave them for someone with better taste.
Oh my God.
That's the only thing I found on it on IMDb. Was that quote and the rating of a 4.6.
You know who wrote that review? Roger Ebert.
Two thumbs way up?
Way up. Way up.
Is that the alive one or the dead one?
They're both dead now.
They're both dead. Okay, I gotta wake up.
Siskel did die first, though. Ebert outlived him.
Yeah.
By probably, what, over
about 10 years?
Has to be. Yeah.
He had cancer.
Jaw cancer.
But it was like right at the time when blogs were becoming really big, and he loved blogging. His blog was something else.
It was very good. He also wrote a book about cooking oatmeal in your slow cooker, I believe.
A book?
He was like, he was like obsessed with cooking like oats in slow cooker.
Dang, enough for a whole book.
Maybe it was in a rice cooker.
He probably would have been like amazing on Twitter.
Yeah, I wonder if there is anything from before he died on there.
One of those dudes wrote something on Twitter about one of the Jackass stars. The guy who passed away, Ryan Dunn. And I remember he had backlash on that, but it might not have been Twitter. It might have been just the internet.
The only thing that I can think of in that regard was when Hulk Hogan posted a picture of himself with Ryan Dunn. And he was like, bam, I can't believe you're gone. Miss you, brother.
So let's get into this here. We get a cold open with some criminals who are wearing baklavas, not the pastries, the masks. And they're standing outside of a jewelry store, and there's a sign that says,
"They're giving it away!"
And right below the sign are like gold necklaces and chains and jewels. And it's just like a box they propped up in the windowsill.
Yeah, outside of the building.
I think the glass would be thicker.
Yeah.
They're going to showcase all that gold and jewelry.
Exactly.
They don't steal all of it either. They steal half of it.
Yeah, they smash the glass and steal the necklaces and jewelry, and then they run through a laundromat. And then they're like hiding out in a converted school bus for some reason. Like, they've got like a school bus behind this laundromat.
What's really funny about the laundromat scene is that one dude tripped, but they're not running fast and they're not carrying a lot. So that tells us that they're really just clumsy criminals.
He's got two left feet.
Yeah. I kind of wondered if the criminals are actually played by the two police officers that showed up, and they just kind of like doubled up.
Oh, yeah.
Is that on IMDb? Does it list who? No.
No, there's nothing. Like, the only things that are on IMDb are Adam Sandler and Jeremy Piven, and that's it. I'm fairly certain that Bowser, the main dog, is voiced by Rob Paulsen, who was the voice of Raphael on the Ninja Turtles and Yakko. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to put a comparison of Bowser's voice and Raphael and Yakko Warner's voice right here.
And remember, with us around, criminals might as well roll over and play dead.
Could we interest you in a subscription to Turtles Home Companion?
Facial infection and fractal infraction and fraudulent fragrant frappe. Frankincense, 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 shoot, yada yada flambe.
All right, so anyway, the disgruntled shop owner runs out screaming that he's been robbed. To me, like, it's his own fault. Because he could have had better security.
Or any security.
Any security at all. Like, maybe don't put gold in a box on your windowsill. And then the two cops show up. And one of them is played by Jeremy Piven, who we've already mentioned.
Ari Gold, baby.
The bumbling cops run the wrong way, of course. And then cut to the back of a police car that's filled with three fedora-wearing, coat-adorned figures. And one of them says,
"I smell some criminals. Mia, use your ESP."
And a female voice says,
"They're dividing up the loot. In a bus. Behind the cleaners.
Let's go get them."
So something I wanted to bring up before is that Jeremy Piven's actually drinking a Slurpee while he's patrolling. I don't know if you noticed that. He's drinking a fucking Slurpee.
I did not notice that.
To see like a policeman like doing anything that would not involve policing is really funny to me. Like, you ever see a cop buy cigarettes before? It's just odd. Like, you don't think they are people. They have an occupation and they just do that. I can agree.
I thought that was Joe Rogan the first time I was watching this.
I have written down that Jeremy Piven is the rich man's Joe Rogan. They were like interchangeable for a little while, like news radio.
Uh-huh.
Like, was that Jeremy Piven or was it Joe Rogan? Nobody fucking knows. It was just some balding man.
Jeremy Piven was on the Ellen sitcom.
Oh, that's right.
And Joe Rogan was on news radio. And news radio being the superior of the two.
Yeah, which one of those still holds up?
I don't know.
It's news radio.
Yeah, of course.
It's still fucking fantastic.
The episode where they're on a space station for some reason. Do you remember that?
I do not remember that.
Yeah, like they just decided to do an episode where the office is a space station.
I'm going to look that up tonight.
And all the jokes are about space.
I need to watch news radio now because I don't think I've ever seen an episode.
You'll love it. You will love it.
Oh my God. Yeah, it has Phil Hartman.
It has, what's his name, who's in all the Coen movies? Martin Root? Stephen Root.
I set the building on fire.
And the main guy is
Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall.
Yeah, I mean, how can you go wrong?
You got Andy Dick. You got
Andy Dick is in that. That I know. I remember him from that. Like when I did see like clips of it, but I have never watched the full episode. I think I know what I'm doing after this.
Yeah,
I'm gonna watch an episode of News Radio.
When Phil Hartman was murdered, they replaced him with John Lovitz, which is the only person that could have filled those shoes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a ticket.
The only good SNL cast member from the 80s.
Yeah. You're not a Piscopo fan?
Hachi machi.
All right, so we cut back to the bus, and the criminals say,
"It's all clear. Cops will never find us here."
And of course, there's a reverse shot, and we get our first view of the
dog police.
I kind of think that the dog police in the show look better than the ones in the music video. Like, you can discern that they're different breeds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just kind of like nebulous dogs.
Oh, well, in the music video, they look like those kids with the wolf disease. whatever you call that. I'm sorry. Apologies to anyone that has the wolf disease.
That movie Freaked by, what's his name? The guy that was Bill in Bill and Ted. He directed it.
Alex Winter.
Yeah. The movie Freaked. God, now I can't even think of his name. Ted. Who plays Ted? He was in The Matrix.
Oh, Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves is in Freaked, and he plays a wolf boy.
Oh, really?
He's uncredited. Have you ever seen the movie Freaked, Joe?
I am literally downloading it right now.
Yeah. I know what I'm doing after news radio.
You're going to have to make a list.
The disease is called Wolf-Hyshorn Syndrome.
Oh.
WHS, which is like a delayed growth and excessive hair on face.
Oh, well, that's kind of sad.
Sorry to bring the mood down. Yeah. Just had to Google it.
Don't forget, yeah. Freaks deserve all your sympathy.
So now, you do not mind mixing with us. How did you say it? Sorry, mutants.
So then we get the theme song, which is, of course, the original song, but a far, far inferior version. In all ways, except for the lyrics, because instead of being disgusting sexist shit, it's now the origin story of the dog police.
They came from outer space and they're out of sight. If you've ever seen them, you know their might. Dressed in a trench coat and a hat, watch them track down those dirty rats.
Which, by the way, that's what cats do, not dogs.
Armed with a badge and a net and a leash, they say they are the
dog police. So they're kind of like the Ninja Turtles in a way. Like they're aliens that are animals. So
the Ninja Turtles are not aliens.
Aren't they aliens from the comic?
They are regular turtles that have been affected by the ooze.
Oh, I think in the comics they're aliens, to be honest.
No.
I've never read the comics.
I know what I'm doing after news radio.
Reading all the Ninja Turtle comics.
The Ninja Turtles are not aliens. They're emphatically not aliens. Krang, which is just in the cartoon, is...
Yeah.
Well, he's not even alien. He's just from, like, Dimension X. That's, like, the closest thing to an alien on that show.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why I'm getting so worked up about it, but Ninja Turtles are not aliens, goddammit.
You bungling idiot. I should have known better than to listen to you.
Krang ruled, man. That was a great villain.
So the dog police, they have a cool classic car with a crime-fighting computer, which we never really get to see, but they really get a lot out of that classic car.
Yeah, what is that car? Is it a drop-top Lincoln or something?
It sounds like it would be the Skylark,
yeah.
But I don't know it either.
Generally, I would look it up, and I had that thought earlier when I was watching it again. It's not a Lincoln.
The Galaxy.
The Galaxy is so sweet. It might be a... fucking
Lincolns, yeah.
Just a Bel Air, right?
Also, something that I wanted to bring up about the intro, they tap dance really lightly.
Yeah.
Like, and it almost feels like they're trying to make their own dance, kind of like the Super Bowl shuffle.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It just feels like they're dancing while they're doing detective work.
Dog dance.
Yeah, get out there on the dance floor. Do the dog things.
Dog. I'm a dog, you're a dog. Everybody do the dog. Bet you're gonna do the dog all day long.
The show starts with the voiceover introducing us to the city of Van Nuys, California.
Van Nuys?
I have no idea why they chose that town.
Yeah, Van Nuys.
Van Nuys? I guess they had an inn there or something. I don't know. But anyway, they're in Van Nuys, and there's just like a voiceover, it's a standard parody of Dragnet.
This is the city of Van Nuys, California. It's filled with used car lots, fast food restaurants, and mini malls. I live here. I'm a cop.
Did you guys ever watch Dragnet?
Unfortunately, yes. I hated it as a child, but yeah, I watched it all the fucking time.
Joe Friday, he's the main guy, Jack Webb. He would always start Dragnet by saying,
"This is the city, Los Angeles, California. It's a good place to live. We try to keep it that way."
And then he'd give a little monologue about the problems of Los Angeles.
Of the 3 million people who live in Los Angeles, 35,000 of them are known rapists, murderers, and thieves. They outnumber the police force 7-1.
And then he would say,
"That's where I come in. I carry a badge.
You know, my partner's Gannon. My name's Friday. The police captain is so-and-so. And we're working out of this division for the week. Blah, 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 whatever." That's kind of what they're parodying. And they use this basic format to give us a huge exposition dump. The main character is Bowser. He's like a tall German shepherd. And then his ex-wife, exclamation point, is Mia Farrow?
To play on Mia Farrow.
Yeah, but why? Like, what does that have to do with anything?
It's actually Woody Allen in the Bowser costume.
He's a little tall, don't you think?
He's wearing lifts.
I think Bowser's the only one with an actual dog breed name, because a Bowser is a Basset Hound and a miniature Schnauzer mix. The other two, I don't know what they are. Mia Pearl and Ollie. I had trouble finding any.
It's Mia Perro.
Yeah.
The Spanish word for dog.
Oh! Mystery solved.
There we go.
Everybody listening can just close that email, just shut it, just close it down. Don't need to send it to us. I think she's supposed to be like a long-haired collie.
Yeah, something like that.
And then they show their son, who is Spooker Luker Lee.
Yep. I don't know what that is.
Just fucking gobbledygook.
Mia and I share custody of our son, Spooker Luker Lee. These are some of his friends.
So we see, for only a second, this kid hanging out with some friends by a wall, and they all look like they're just having a good time, and he's just like this kid wearing a dog mask and dog sleeves, and then you can see his bare, skinny legs.
He gets a handshake, and it's like he's giving paw, you know? I think that's what they were trying to go for.
He's a popular guy.
Yeah.
You know? He's not getting harassed or anything.
Everybody loves
him. He's got like the skinniest white legs I've ever seen. And this massive dog face. But very bizarre.
The third one is Ollie, who is a bloodhound, maybe?
Yeah, some sort of basset hound, I think.
So they all wear trench coats and fedoras, and they all have bone bow ties, which I thought was a nice touch. And then he goes through like their ability.
"We can run up to 50 miles per hour, hear a conversation 2 miles away, and retain a scent for up to a week, which isn't always an advantage, especially if you're catching crooks who never take baths."
Yeah, they stink. Crime stinks, guys.
All of that just to focus on jewelry thieves when they could be fighting terrorists. Yeah.
They could have caught the fucking Oklahoma City bomber, and instead they're going after a couple of guys that took a single necklace out of a glass case.
There's a lot they need to explain here. They're from outer space, and they have ESP. He forgot to mention that. So then Bowser says,
"Here are two scenes from our new TV show. Enjoy."
When the show actually starts, we were in a police station office, and the first thing that happens is Adam Sandler walks in, and we all know he was on SNL, so that means I get to put a Don Pardo clip right here.
"Our regular programming will not be seen this morning, so the National Broadcasting Company can kick off the holiday season live from New York City with our telecast of the spectacular 68th Annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Listeners, keep sending me those Don Pardo clips. I promise you I'll eventually use all of them. So this is pre-SNL Sandler. This was like right before he joined the cast. I think he joined in 1991, and this is 1990.
And it took Jeremy Piven 14 years to find Entourage after this.
Yeah. Well, PCU set him back a few years.
Can you imagine if Dog Police had been picked up, we would have been spared every Adam Sandler movie ever?
No. We would have gotten them sooner.
This almost feels like an Adam Sandler movie.
It really does.
But maybe just one dog that's Adam Sandler and he fights crime and he has a really loud voice. Yeah.
It's a little bit more intelligible than an Adam Sandler movie, and there isn't as much product placement.
Okay, careful there. I've had about enough of your Adam Sandler hate, bud.
Really? You're an Adam Sandler fan?
I'm, you know, grew up with the Adam Sandler movies, of course. How could I not be?
I like Billy Madison.
If peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.
And I like some of Happy Gilmore, but after that, I cannot stand him. He's so obnoxious.
Stop looking at me, Swan!
I mean, he was really great in Punch Drunk Love, yeah. If you've ever seen that, but that's not really a comedy at all.
P.T. Anderson, so
oh, yeah.
A little bit higher pedigree?
Yeah.
All right, so Adam Sandler plays Shifty, and he's like a lovable scamp. He is honestly like the best part of this show, which isn't saying a whole lot because it's only 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
So anyway, the two bumbling cops show up, and they start harassing Mia and Bowser about their divorce.
You know, I finally figured out why Mia and Bowser broke up.
Yeah? Why is that?
Well, you see, they thought it would last forever, right? But then they realized it was only... Puppy love!
Seems kind of harsh and awful.
Yeah, like, fucking, you know? Low-hanging fruit, man.
And it's unwarranted. It's so random. Like, they just walk in and they're not even together at that point. They're just separated in the office.
There's like a running theme tonight of like cops being just really fucking awful to each other.
Yeah, all cops are bastards.
Even to each other.
Mm-hmm. And tons of dog puns throughout the 8 minutes. That's all it is.
Oh, so many bad puns.
It's gonna be rough.
Yeah.
So the police chief comes in.
All right, crime busters, settle down. We have a city to protect.
And Ollie is playing what looks like Tetris on a Game Boy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. All right, Ollie, knock it off.
Oh, in a minute, sir.
Knock it off.
Come on, I'm at the fifth level. You understand?
And the Game Boy would have been brand new. Like, it would have just come out. And I guess that gives him an excuse because he has no idea how to play it at all. He's, like, just poking at it with his index finger.
It's kind of funny to see them play it because you don't have, like, five fingers to do it. So it looked really clunky to see it. Also, I don't think it was turned on.
No, it wasn't. I made a note of that. You can see the LED and it's off. So Tetris comes with the Game Boy. They must have just bought a Game Boy. No, they had no idea what it was. They were just like, here, pretend like you're messing with this thing. There's a part later on where Adam Sandler's playing with it.
Ollie, thank you for the new toy. Level's fine, not bad.
He's using his right hand to push the D-pad, which is on the opposite side,
yeah.
Which makes no sense. Like, why would you do that? So he's obviously never held one before. This was the first documented time that Adam Sandler ever held a Game Boy. So anyway, Ollie's playing a Game Boy, and the captain says,
if you are one of the best officers I have you out on your flipping ears.
At this point, this show is already half over, so thank God. This is the halfway mark right here. The captain tells him,
as you all know, the mayor's holding his press conference this morning at 10. He wants half a dozen uniforms, same unit as the last time, specifically Anna Marie.
And they cut to a very embarrassed lady cop, and everyone is howling, and it's really uncomfortable and weird.
I didn't understand the reaction. Like, why was Anna Marie so embarrassed by this assignment of guarding the conference? It was just an odd.
Something is going on with her and the mayor.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's what they're implying.
It's just weird. Like, why would you throw that in? Yeah. I don't know. It's like, I think the biggest problem with this is just so much wasted time on things that don't make any sense or, you know, aren't funny.
Yeah. Like the rib shack and then smoking into the...
Yeah, that's the next thing that happens is he gives the two bumbling cops an assignment to stop a barbecue restaurant from blowing smoke into an apartment complex.
Now, Clyde's rib joint is blowing smoke into the Oakwood Apartments again. Let's see. Larson, Schwartz, See if you can clear the air.
Okay.
Which is the easier of the two. Like,
and then he just like doesn't give the dog police anything to do, to which they protest and ask for an assignment. And then the captain says,
I got a special assignment for you. Follow me.
And leads them into a room and hands them a pile of arrest records. And apparently the dog police are really good at catching criminals, but they're not very good at doing their paperwork.
Who is?
I don't type so good.
And then suddenly, over the intercom...
Attention, available special units. Hostage situation in progress. Third floor, City Hall. Suspect, male Caucasian. Motive unknown.
And this sounds super exciting and interesting, and I wish we got to see it. They turn to the captain and he tells them,
okay, go ahead, hit the trail. Yes.
And so they run outside and they all get into their cool dog police car and they put the car in drive.
Hey, what's the matter?
And the camera pulls out and
hey, how are you? I didn't see that. Good to see you.
What are you doing, Shippy?
And Adam Sandler is underneath the car and he's removed all of the wheels and the car is up on cinder blocks. So Ollie gets out, and with super speed, he throws the wheels, and they, like, pop onto the car somehow. They, like, bounce up and jump onto the car, and then he's tightening the lug knots with really super speed. Are dogs really known for being really fast at mechanical stuff? Like, what is this?
Alien dogs are.
Oh, they're aliens. That's right.
Adam Sandler is also underneath the middle of the car, which is kind of weird. It's implied that he takes the wheels off, but yeah. He's underneath the middle of the car, not like on the side.
I watched this. I thought he was like their mechanic.
Yeah, that's kind of what yeah. I felt like as well.
But he's not. He's just like a criminal.
No, he's just down there stealing their catalytic converter.
So then they drive off, and then Bowser tells us that there is more to come.
They say every dog has its day. Ours is Saturday. Come join us for action and adventure as we sniff out crime and maybe a laugh or two.
There is not. That's it. That's all there is to Dog Police. The end. All right, gentlemen. It's time for the main event. Puchinsky.
Puchinsky. Here he's come. Puchinsky.
What did you guys think about Puchinsky?
I'm going to share an unpopular opinion, other than it being very sexist at points. I thought it had good potential other than that. And I know that's probably an unpopular opinion, but I actually thought it could work as a TV show.
I agree. Yeah. So
I'm going to agree with you.
Okay.
100%. I really enjoyed Puchinsky. 1990, I would have been 8 years old. I would have loved it.
I kind of remember it. I don't know how I would have seen it. I'm not sure if it aired ever.
Yes, it did.
It did air, yeah.
On what channel?
NBC.
Yeah, NBC, yeah. I'm going to start here with a quote. This is from the LA Times from July 9th, 1990. This was written by Howard Rosenberg, and it's entitled, The Dog Days and Nights of Summer. The mongrels of Monday NBC and pairing snubbed series pilots Puchinsky and Turner and Hooch calls this a two-dog night. But actually, it's a three-dog night if you include the new CBS series, Primetime Pets. A straight arrow cop named McKay is jolted when his late partner, that slob Puchinsky, returns in the body of a talking English bulldog, seeking to find the man who murdered his human self. McKay and Puchinsky work together. NBC could merge these two into a single spectacular titled Puchinsky. So Puchinsky aired back-to-back with a pilot for Turner and Hooch, July 9th, 1990. They had already passed on it, but I don't know if they still do this, but they have a slot, I guess, in the summer where they just throw up pilots that they've already passed on.
Yeah.
Just to kind of get their money's worth out of them.
I don't think that they still do that, but they would, like, show them as special movie presentations or whatever.
That's just incredibly frustrating to me because, like, you see this, then you never see it again, and it's just gone.
Puchinsky kind of feels like it's a Budweiser commercial throughout. So it feels like,
yeah.
It just feels that way. And I think you probably get some kind of closure when you'd see another animatronic character like Sabrina the Teenage Witch or I don't know. I don't think if I saw this, I would need any more like a conclusion. But I think watching it and researching it now, I feel like it does have legs to go somewhere versus what we just watched before with Dog Police.
That's a really good point. I wonder if that dog, Muppet, animatronic Muppet, was reused from something.
Spuds McKenzie.
Yeah. they just fucked his face up a little bit.
So the show had four writers, but the one I want to focus on is David Kirshner. Every show or movie he has been involved with has had some element of either puppets or animation or both. Mm-hmm. He's most known for creating Fievel, the American Tail franchise, which was the highest grossing animated non-Disney movie at the time of its release.
Wachowski's in the middle of Child's Play 1 and Child's Play 2. It's right in the middle of both those two.
It's funny you say that, because the second thing he's known for is he created Chucky. He didn't create the concept. He didn't write the script. He physically built the Chucky puppet.
Wow.
Which scared me as a kid, and it probably still scares me now.
Not me too.
Who didn't it scare?
Yeah. It was scary as shit. As a notorious pussy. Like, anyone that knows me knows that I'm not like a horror movie guy. And as a kid, I was just like,
yeah,
fucking literally afraid of everything. E.T., Yoda, all of it.
Yeah, me too.
After watching that movie, I just wanted to put all my toys in a locked box under the bed. You never know if they're going to pop out.
Put them in that big plastic football and fucking put a book on top.
Even every time that My Buddy commercial would come on, it would scare me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'd have to turn it off.
I think the big two at that time for me were Chucky and fucking Critters. Which, as I got older and I actually watched Critters, those movies are incredibly fun and funny and just a dumb roller coaster ride.
Yeah, I feel the same way about, like, Gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, Gremlins terrified me. And now, it's like one of my absolute favorite movies to watch at Christmas. I think it's one of the best Christmas movies ever. Way better than Die Hard. So anyway, all this is to say, David Kirshner has this history of making terrified, fucked up puppets or being involved with them.
And Puccini is pretty scary looking too, if you didn't know what it was.
Even low res, it's just kind of like Uncanny Valley kind of territory.
Yeah, we're not talking Jim Henson or Industrial Light and Magic here. This is like
my nightmare, you know, every other day.
So the Puccini video was uploaded to YouTube 8 years ago, and it has 32,000 views. And this is the only video on that channel. The uploader actually apologized for it in the description. He says, "I don't know what compelled me to upload this. I'm sorry."
I did read that. That was really
just some like wildly rich Hollywood producer that's been sitting on this for years, gets divorced, gets just fucking blackout drunk on fucking rum and cocaine one night. It's like, you know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to upload that fucking failed pilot with Peter Boyle and George Newbern, where Peter Boyle turns into a goddamn dog.
So we open with a helicopter shot of the city.
Car 307.
And music that sounds strikingly similar to George Thurgood's Bad to the Bone. But not enough that they would need to pay him, because his name does not show up in the credits.
And you know what also I noticed? The font for Puccini is the same font, or almost the same font, as Bigfoot Monster Truck.
Oh my god.
Oh wow.
Yeah, you're totally right.
So we hear police radio chatter. The dispatcher is being sexually harassed by none other than our hero.
Hey, who's this?
I'm Casey, the new dispatcher.
Casey? Anyone ever tell you you've got a real sexy voice?
Then we get a shot literally lifted out of Police Squad. It's the top of the cop car driving around with the siren going, and I was expecting it to start driving through a locker room shower or down a roller coaster or something.
Gun, huh?
So then we meet our two main characters, Stanley Puccini, who's played by Peter Boyle.
The greatness thereof.
He's a character actor. He usually plays blue-collar workers.
Losers, sports writers, dads.
Yeah, he's like a grizzled Chicago type.
He is a Chicago type guy. Mm-hmm.
But he's best known as playing the monster in Young Frankenstein.
Is he best known for that, or is he best known for Everybody Love Raymond?
Well, that's the second thing he's known for. He played Ray's father in Everybody Loves Raymond, like, way later in his life.
Yeah, the whole reason for, well, I guess what's his name? Brad Garrett is pretty great in that show as well, but Peter Boyle's what you come for if you're watching Raymond.
Sure, you're not coming for Ray Romano.
Hell no.
Ah, Deborah!
Hell no.
I read a little bit about Everybody Loves Raymond, and before they cast Peter Boyle, the note they had given about his character was he has a bulldog attitude.
His spirit animal feels like it would be a bulldog, too.
Yeah.
That's true.
So it makes sense that the dog would be a bulldog in this show.
He is well cast in this role. I can't imagine anybody else.
Yeah.
He is definitely like a grumpy dog that is also just incredibly fucking lovable. That's what he is. He's like a fucking lovable curmudgeon.
Yeah, absolutely. And then our second lead is our friend and fellow Arkansan.
Returning champion and fan favorite.
George Newbern. Who our devoted listeners will remember as Dr. Tom.
Doorways.
Real heads remember Father of the Bride 1, 2, and 3.
And his starring role in Theodore Rex.
Gotcha.
This was 3 years before Doorways. And, you know, we've been pretty hard on George Newbern, but, I mean, the man did get in a couple of pilots. He was on a lot of movies, and he's a working actor. He wasn't in anything very good, but he definitely accomplished more than most people as far as being able to make a living as an actor.
That's fair to say, yeah.
Yeah.
So these two, they're responding to an armed robbery. The assailant is complaining that it took them too long to get there. And he says,
"What kept you, a long line of Mr. Donuts?"
So then Puchinsky gets out of the car and pulls McKay aside and says he's just sick of listening to this guy and wants to get out of there. And McKay complains,
"You know, Puchinsky, I've been covering you for a month, and I'm sick of it."
"It's only a month? Seems like an eternity."
Right off the bat, we have this contentious odd couple dynamic where McKay is like by the books and Muchinsky is like lackadaisical.
Yeah.
That's established really quick and really well. So that they did a really good job of that.
Yeah, it's almost like a straight absurd behavior here with these characters.
Absolutely. McKay is
the straight, and then Puchinsky would be the absurd.
George Newbern's a really good straight man. It's just like what he was doing in Doorways, where he's got the weird Sid Vicious woman. And he's got to play straight to that.
Yeah. He's just the perfect sui generis or whatever people say.
I think it'd probably be harder to play that than like an absurd part. But yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're like reacting to this absurdity already to begin with.
That's true. So then I think there was a commercial right here. Because then we cut to a hot dog stand. At the bottom of the screen, we get like a really old school NBC and stereo were available graphic.
Oh my God.
Which was pretty cool, like seeing that.
Yeah, that's a great one. If they had done a, you know, Puchinsky is filmed in front of a live studio audience. I fucking lost my mind.
Yeah, this show needed a laugh track for yeah. sure. No comedic line left at all.
Yeah. There are a couple that landed for me, but I'm a fucking rube and very easy.
No,
to
there were
laugh.
A few for sure, but
I can't think of a single time that I really laughed in this. Oh. Intentionally or unintentional humor. Like nothing really stuck with me. I watched it with my wife and she was very not into it. She was very happy when it was over.
Oh, I hated it. I hated it.
So Puchinsky is buying a hot dog and he hears some commotion in the alley. And he walks down to investigate, and it's a bunch of kids tormenting a dog that he can't see.
Leave that dog alone.
What's it to you, Grandpa?
And one of the kids flashes a fucking switchblade. Like a 9-year-old child. This is a rough town.
This is the part that made me fucking guffaw like a fucking idiot. Him looking at the kid and going, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm old. I forget stuff."
"Like whether or not this gun is loaded. Well, there's only one way to find out."
He pulls a gun out.
Yeah, he pulls out a gun.
And the little kid, like a fucking central casting thug, just goes,
"This guy's crazy. Come on!"
That was a really funny part. But I also sided with Puchinsky there. Absolutely. Like seeing the animal abuse, I think his gun draw like totally warranted in this scene.
Totally justified. Yes.
It's a classic example of police de-escalation tactics.
Yeah. They're harassing a dog too, though. You know, I was trying to see what I can really see in that. Like, are they just poking the dog or like tormenting it? It was a very awkward scene.
Really weird tone to start off. I mean, we're not even like 3 minutes into this, and we've got kids with knives,
and they're beating the shit out of a dog.
So Paczynski bends down and he coaxes it out of the pile of garbage he's in, and he shares his hot dog with him.
That was very funny to me as well. Just like the pure delight of giving a dog a bite of a hot dog is very funny and delightful to me.
He lets the dog lick his face and he says,
"Ugly and all alone in the world, huh? I know how that feels."
So then we cut to the front of a police station, and McKay and Paczynski pull up, and the bulldog is in the back seat of their car, and McKay is complaining about how bad the dog smells.
If you insist on bringing that thing along, you can at least bathe it.
Well, you know nothing about bulldogs? That's the way they always smell.
As if that's an excuse.
And because, of course, he knows about bulldogs, too.
His last name is Paczynski. It's the traditional Polish dog trainer name.
See, I thought in the opening credits, the dispatcher refers to him as Chinsky.
Oh.
And then when he becomes the dog, spoiler alert, he becomes Paczynski. But I don't think that's credible. Because I try to listen to the open credits for a while because I was trying to really hear the poo part and I could not hear it. It just sounds like they're calling him Chinsky.
Yeah, you're right.
You always have to listen very closely for the poo part.
Yeah.
So he leans into the back seat and puts a collar on the dog and lets it lick his face all over. And there's two cops standing on the sidewalk and they're just watching in disgust. And then one walks over to him and says,
"Hey, Paczynski, finally found someone to kiss you?"
"Hey, Schreiber, don't let the word get around. I wouldn't want anyone to think I've been unfaithful to your wife."
That scene was super awkward. It makes no sense.
Like, how would he be unfaithful to his wife? Like, it's his wife.
Because she's his regular girl.
Well, but it's his wife.
Yeah, his wife is cucking him with Paczynski.
But she's already being unfaithful.
She's being unfaithful to her husband. But Paczynski would then be being unfaithful to her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
To his wife.
It's a reach.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a fucking reach.
I think that the cop was just as confused as I was.
Yeah, he had a very weird look. And that's also the same guy who played the coach in Little Giants.
"Hey, come on. I thought you wanted to win."
And he looks like a cop. So he's second in command with Ed O'Neill.
Not like that.
And I think he's second in command on this show. But he just looks like law enforcement with his short little white or blonde hair. He just looks like such a dick.
Yeah.
So I don't really mind the comment to him about sleeping with his wife. He just feels like a dick.
Yeah, absolutely. He proves himself to be a dick later on. So then we cut to inside the police station, and McKay is talking to the police cap, who is played by Frank McKay. Are you guys familiar with Frank McKay?
No.
I know he's got a lot roles that are similar where he plays captains and sergeants and
yes.
Police chiefs. He's almost typecast for this.
Oh, yeah. IMDb describes his trademark as a yelling police captain. that's his character. He is the best police chief ever. He is everything you could want from a police chief in a movie. He's just angry and exacerbated and fed up with everyone's bullshit. Always.
Throwing papers around, slamming files.
So he originated the yelling police chief character in 48 hours?
Really?
"This is it for you! Suspension! Review board! You've had it!"
Don't you think you're being kind of hard on the guy?
"You go fuck yourself!"
Every police chief after this, they're just trying to emulate him. And then he parodied himself twice. The first was in 1993's Loaded Weapon Part 1. He plays the police captain, and he is just this tower of unbridled fury screaming at everyone in the police station, and all the cops just flee like cockroaches when he comes in the room. But the gag is he's just saying normal things.
"Coffee! No thanks. Cappuccino! Espresso!"
It's like Germans who say nice things on the Dana Carvey show.
"You are the world's greatest grandpa! Was a pleasure babysitting Kevin!"
So then the second time he parodied himself was in The Last Action Hero.
Oh, shit.
Where he just screams nonsense at Arnold Schwarzenegger until, like, all the windows shatter and smoke starts pouring out of his ears. And for no reason at all, there's a TV behind him showing a volcano erupting. Arnold Schwarzenegger is sitting there with this kid who's like the main kid. And he's like, "Are you understanding any of this? Is this making sense to you?" It's so good. So in this scene, McKay has come to see the captain to request a new partner because he and Puchinsky are not getting along, and the chief is having none of it. He thinks McKay can learn a lot from Puchinsky, who apparently has a storied career.
Right, he stopped the post office bomber.
Who caught the North Hill Strangler? Who caught the post office bomber?
Puchinsky.
Don't confuse hygiene with character.
That should be the tagline of the show. Don't confuse hygiene with character.
Very good.
Yeah.
We cut to the street at night, and Puchinsky and McKay are sitting in a car on some kind of a stakeout. Puchinsky is singing Everybody Needs Somebody by Frank Sinatra.
Dean Martin. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did not know that. He's driving McKay and the bulldog nuts.
For God's sakes, this is a stakeout.
And then Puchinsky shows McKay a picture of a woman he's seeing.
Nice, huh? You get to meet a lot of great broads when you work Vice.
And we never meet her. She isn't at his funeral or anything. I feel like maybe like in the second episode, maybe she would have shown up.
Maybe would have explored that option, yeah, because you don't see it after this.
Well, he mentions her kind of a little bit later, but I don't want to be too hard on it. Sure. It would have been a good plot point to like fill in another episode. And then a pizza guy shows up.
Hey, you guys want to stake out? 1734.
Revealing too much already.
And Puchinsky, of course, has no money.
Oh, yeah, I'm a little bit short. Can you spare a few bucks?
McKay gives him a wad of cash.
Yeah. There you go, kid.
Wow.
And he gives the whole wad to the pizza guy, who just says,
thanks,
and runs off without giving any change.
That is how you do it. As an inveterate pizza delivery guy, if a man hands you a wad of cash, or if a man, as happened to me one time, asks you for your Bitcoin wallet address to send you Bitcoin as a tip, just don't question it. Just let him fucking do it.
Gee, thanks.
Thank you.
Puchinsky opens the box. And says,
look at this garbage. Shrimp and pineapple. What do I look like? Some kind of health food nut?
I didn't get that because it's shrimp.
Yeah, it's like candy pizza.
Pineapple. It's a weird combination, but I didn't think that was considered healthy.
It might as well be the fucking apple pizza from DC's. Yeah.
Opposite.
It's 1990.
Yeah, shrimp was a health food back then. No, it's pineapple. It's good for you. It comes from a tree. It doesn't come from a tree. Don't email me.
Puchinsky tries to call the dispatcher to get them to send another pizza. And that's when McKay loses it. And while they're arguing and yelling at each other, a man steals a purse from a lady on the sidewalk. I guess that's what they were doing. They were like staking out the sidewalk for purse thieves.
They were staking out. They had a rash of robberies at the ATM. What did they call it, though? Intracash or something like that? Instacash?
Okay, I must have missed that.
Yeah, I only caught it on the fucking fifth viewing.
So we get our first action scene. McKay jumps out of the car to run down the thief, and Puchinsky stays behind, telling him not to be a hero. He runs to a parking lot where an 80s muscle car tries to run him over, and he shoots directly at the windshield, and then jumps out of the way and shoots at the rear of the car. Then he calls Puchinsky on his enormous handheld radio. And Puchinsky puts one of those cool police dome suction cup things on the car's roof and drives off, somehow getting in front of the fleeing criminal's car. And then he parks it parallel across the street to block the path. And then Puchinsky gets out, leaving the door open, and gets behind the car and pulls his gun. Well, because he left the door open, the bulldog escapes, and Puchinsky screams,
"Hey, get out of the street, you crazy mutt!"
Runs out in the street to save the dog, and in slow motion, he picks him up and throws him out of the way, just in time to be hit by the criminal's speeding car. And this is when McKay shows up. But Puchinsky, you think he's dead. Surely he's dead, but he's not. He's just like gasping, and he tells McKay to take the Cubs tickets out of his pocket.
Cub tickets, Foxy's, take a date, or better yet, see what you can get for him.
That's his dying words.
That's his last words on Earth.
I guess that sets this in Chicago, because we haven't really set where this is yet. I don't know the skyline. I mean, Jason, you would know the skyline better than you would know that, because at first I thought it was New York.
Yeah, I think there's reference at some point of it being Chicago, and I think you do see the Chrysler building in the intro. Yeah, but the Cubs tickets would make sense if that's what he's giving out. Yeah,
and Peter Boyle too, like has like a thick Chicago accent.
I also think he would just die instantly. By the way. Like,
yeah, he just got hit by a car, like a speeding car.
There shouldn't be enough time to give a line about Cubs ticket.
He's not bloody or anything. Like, it just knocked the breath out of him.
And then he dies.
It's internal bleeding.
Then he dies. Before he dies, the bulldog shows up and sits next to Paczynski, and he's kind of crying. And McKay's calling for help on his enormous radio. And at this point, Paczynski and the bulldog's eyes lock, and we get this magical music as we pan across Paczynski's eyes and then across the bulldog's eyes. And then Paczynski keels over, and we pan out across a steamy, trash-littered street as another cop car shows up.
We needed to see, like, special effects for that, because they just lock eyes, and that's about it. They could have spent some budget on maybe, like,
a little lightning bolt a la Raiders or something.
Yeah, or maybe, like, a lightning bolt hits the moment he dies or something.
I have a theory about where this show was going at some point. We will talk about that.
Yeah, later. To explain the physics of all of this. I have questions about Paczynski's ability, like, later on.
I have a lot of questions about what's going on with that dog. So then the next thing that happens is we get a crane shot into a cemetery, and McKay is kneeling over a grave covered in flowers.
There's also not a lot of people at the funeral. You'd think they'd be staffed up.
Not really.
Yeah.
Not for a slain police officer.
He caught the Hillside Strangler in the post office.
Yeah.
Who caught the North Hill Strangler? Who caught the post office bomber?
You'd think there would be, like, a politician there, you know?
I mean, they usually have, like, the fucking policeman's bagpipe band at these funerals, right?
So anyway, McKay is kneeling over the grave, and we hear someone say,
"Boy, you're really beating yourself up over this, aren't you?"
Who said that?
"Short memory. It's your partner, Paczynski." Ha! Surprise!
Paczynski.
And this is when we get our first look at the dog puppet. It's really fucking disturbing. Like, it's so bad.
It's got too many but not enough parts to its head.
So I was looking at animatronics, and I thought, like, maybe the baby from Dinosaurs, Sinclair, would be scary, and I re-looked that up, and it doesn't look scary. So I don't know why this bulldog looks terrifying, because they could have done something like that, you know, where it was a little bit more cleaner.
That was Henson, though.
Dinosaurs was actually one of Jim Henson's last projects before he died.
God, R.I.P. R.I.P. Yeah. To an absolute fucking king.
Dinosaurs holds up. Not only does it hold up, it's better as an adult. It is such a good show. Such amazing biting satire.
Maybe we can get them to give us money for this, but Dinosaurs streaming now on Disney Plus.
Did you guys watch Dinosaurs when it was on?
Absolutely. Also very scary.
It was like Roseanne.
Yeah.
Right? It was like an animatronic Roseanne.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, it's very much like a blue-collar sitcom. And I've actually read, like, the writers. They were like, yeah, as long as we made the baby hit someone with a pan and say, "Not the mama," we could do whatever we wanted.
Not the mama. Not the mama. Not the mama.
Oh, my God. That's fucking great.
Not the mama.
What a dream. The main episode that I remember, because it scared the living shit out of me, was an episode where they're left home alone and the food in the fridge decides to revolt and attack them, and it's led by, like, a terrifying, like, one-eyed pirate cat with a fork for a hand.
I remember
it's
that.
It's absolutely batshit crazy, but yeah, it was fucking great, but also just terrifying for some reason.
And the backgrounds of that show, like, the sets were just so rich and deep.
Yeah.
It's like everything that the Flintstones, the movie, was trying to be, but it's not just dinosaurs going, it's a living.
Which is honestly just one of the absolute funniest bits of all time in television history to me.
The last episode of Dinosaurs, spoiler alert, they didn't want anybody to, like, come back and, like, take the series somewhere that they didn't want to go. So in the last episode, there's, like, okay, there's this corporation in Dinosaurs called We Say So.
Yes, life is good because
we say so.
What a great ad.
I can't remember why, but they decide that they need to blow up all of the volcanoes on Earth, and it brings about the Ice Age. Everybody dies.
Oh, that's sad.
Has there ever been a sitcom where everybody dies in the last episode?
A sitcom? No, but Do you remember the last episode of David the Gnome?
Yes.
Yeah, where David the Gnome and his wife are both transformed into trees as they die. And Swift the Fox is left looking in horror as they die.
Ugh, oh my god, yeah, that fucked me up.
It's fucked up now.
Because, like, at the beginning of the episode, David just kind of looks at his wife and goes...
That's the way life is.
I just feel so sad when I think of leaving our friends.
Yes, Lisa. But we're past 400. It's time.
Yes. I'm sorry. Nothing lasts forever, does it, darling?
Lisa.
And you think, like, maybe something's going to happen and they're going to get out of it? Nope. They just say, we're gonna go die now. And then they spend their time, like, walking to this place where they both become, like, trees, like you said.
Yeah, the last, like, 5 seconds, he, like, looks at her and he's like,
farewell.
Farewell, my dear David, my husband, my love.
Farewell, my beloved. I thank you for all the love you've given me.
And then they just transform into trees. It's fucking unreal.
It's so... Like, and this was on Nick Jr.
Yeah.
Not only was it on Nickelodeon, it was on the preschool Nickelodeon.
The Scandinavians are on a whole other level of, like, reconciling with life and death. I don't know if you've ever read My Struggle by Karl Ove Knausgård. It's 6 books that are just autobiographical.
How old is that?
It's pretty new. The last one just came out last year or the year before. It's been going on since, like, 2008, probably.
Huh.
But it's just an examination of his entire fucking life. He's, like, the most famous person in Norway. Apparently, I have not read this, but this is what I have heard. There is a part of one of the books that is, like, 50 pages about him moving a fridge with his father-in-law.
Sounds dark.
Everything that I've read from the first book is just... It's phenomenal. It's so good. I cannot recommend it enough, but the fucking Scandinavians are so weird, man.
It's cold and it's dark and it's never going to end.
Yeah, it's cold, it's dark, and there is no escape.
And that's life.
So anyway, back to Puchinsky.
What a segue.
The dog has to convince McKay that he's actually the reincarnated Puchinsky. They leave it very ambiguous. He says,
all I know is I saw this big tunnel and this big shaft of light, and I heard voices at the end of it. Relatives' voices. And they were calling, here boy, come on, come on. And next thing I knew, I had a tail.
This is amazing. You're a dog.
Bulldogs don't have tails.
Yeah, they have little stubby tails.
They have nubs.
But he really likes being a dog.
You got stronger teeth. You can take a nap anytime you want.
He gets to, like, hump people's legs and pee anywhere he wants. And
he gets away with it, too, because he's a dog.
It's like it was meant to be.
Yeah.
I think it's important that we bring up, one of many issues here, starting with how did Puchinsky get to the cemetery?
Ooh.
There are a lot of times in the show where he seems to be able to just appear on top of things or teleport around from place to place. He's just kind of wherever it's convenient. It's just like the magic of Puchinsky.
Yeah, the physics don't really line up, because for a minute I thought that Puchinsky died and came back to life. Because, you know, he leaves the crime scene after Boyle dies, and you don't know where he goes. And then, like you said, he just magically appears at the funeral.
The dog just wanders off?
Maybe.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah. They didn't pay it. Yeah, the dog, like, why did they not know where the dog, like, why is he just now discovered?
Because
the dog?
He wasn't with McKay. So he just kind of, I guess maybe at that point he knew he was a dog and then found the funeral on, like, a news channel or read a newspaper on the ground and said, oh my God, here's my funeral. Let me go to it.
That would have been a fun scene, him discovering his own funeral by reading a newspaper that was covering up a homeless guy sleeping on a bench.
And then he poops on it.
So the second issue I have is, how is his soul inhabiting his dog? Not like, what are the mechanics that made this possible? Obviously, that's just hand-waving TV logic.
Movie magic.
What happened to the dog's soul?
The dog soul had to have been transferred into him. However, this all plays into where I think the series was going. Sorry, there's a dog going crazy out here.
It ties perfectly.
It's Paczynski.
Yeah.
He's here. He made it.
It was like a Freaky Friday situation, but it was unfortunate for Boyle's character to die. So the dog actually dies, if you think about it in those terms.
So, okay. So the theory is that the dog soul and Paczynski's soul changed places, and then the dog's like, oh, I'm a person. Then he just died.
Oh, shit. What's this crippling pain? All I see is darkness and fire.
The other option is that the dog's soul is still in the dog's body, but he's like a prisoner, and he's unable to control his body. He's just like looking out.
And Stuart, that's exactly where I think the series would have gone in about the 8th season.
Oh, yeah.
I think that it would have been a rich examination of the human soul and what happens when two souls inhabit the same body.
And that's the third option, that like Paczynski and the dog's soul like merged or blended together. And that explains why Paczynski, he keeps doing dog things. And McKay's like, why are you doing that? He's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a dog. It's like on Deep Space Nine, the Trills, they blend together with the worm that's inside of their bodies.
I don't know.
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
No idea.
No.
Okay.
You lost me at news radio.
Did you even watch TV in the 90s?
I was busy watching Arthur, Stewart.
Yeah. Rhubar, you know? I just had that on repeat.
Under the Umbrella Tree, anyone?
Between the Lions? All right, so Paczynski tells McKay they have to find his killer. McKay says,
you can forget that. I'm off the case, and you're whatever you are.
And Paczynski is so disgusted that he jumps off the tombstone he's standing on and starts eating grass and throwing up.
You're going to make yourself sick.
Exactly.
That's why I thought it was a Budweiser commercial. It was too gross to like, and it was so random.
Oh yeah, Budweiser commercials always had some dog throwing up in them, don't they?
The old ones do. He also talks about, before he finds his killer, he wants to give himself auto fellatio.
Yeah.
He's like,
first I'm going to try licking myself, and then I'm going to catch my killer.
Like, that's more important. Giving himself a blowjob is more important than finding the man who killed him.
We've all been there.
It's like, I need to find my killer, but there's something I've been wanting to try. So eventually, Paczynski is able to convince McKay to talk to the chief. And, oh, by the way, they put the guy Shriver on the case. He's the guy that Paczynski was harassing about sleeping with his wife or whatever.
He's also wearing cuffs in that scene, which is weird. He has one cuff on.
It's because he killed his wife. Oh, not handcuffed?
I forgot about that. Yeah, he is like taking off cuffs, aren't he? Yeah. So they shake paws.
Put her there, pal.
Cut to the police station.
It's great to be back.
Kay and Paczynski walk in to the generic not bad to the bone theme. And Shriver is there, and he immediately starts harassing McKay.
What's Paczynski's mutt doing here?
He's with me.
Really? I don't see how you can stand to be around a kisser like that.
This is a fellow police officer who just witnessed his partner's murder.
We found a theme with cops with all these shows. They're dicks to other cops for no reason.
Paczynski does this like head bob, like he's listening. Then we see Shriver's white pants leg and tan shoes, and they are covered in dog pee.
The dog pee's also like Nickelodeon green, though. Piss, like, it's kind of odd.
So McKay picks up Paczynski and hands him to the dispatcher, who's drying her nails, and she's more than happy to hold him. And Paczynski loves him. He's like burying his face into her cleavage, and she's just like all about it.
Yeah, this is where it gets problematic, I think.
So McKay goes into the chief's office, and for some reason the chief is like really happy. He's like bubbly.
Yeah, he's extremely happy that Paczynski is dead.
And he's like,
the best thing for you to do is to go home, take a few days off, collect your thoughts.
And then they like look out through the window, and Paczynski and the dispatcher, they like fall backwards in the chair.
Yeah.
And And they're just having a great time on the floor. And that's the end of the scene. So then cut to McKay, and Puchinsky is on a leash, and McKay has a bag of groceries, and they are going into an elevator, and Puchinsky knocks McKay over, and he spills all his groceries all over the ground. And then we meet Franny, who's also getting onto the elevator. And Franny is played by Amy Yazbeck.
Yeah, from The Mask.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's a fairly prolific actor. She has a lot of comedic bit parts and tons of movies. She also starred in two movies that are very close to my heart, Robin Hood Men in Tights as Maid Marian.
We roam around the forest looking for heights.
Yes.
And Dracula Dead and Loving It as Mina Seward.
Yeah.
Yes.
Give him an enema first, then put him in a straitjacket.
So she's definitely a Mel Brooks level comedian. So Franny gets on the elevator with McKay and Puchinsky, and she's with her daughter Katie. And McKay is slack-jawed, which is the default expression for George Newbern.
God forbid we ever have him on this podcast and he listens to old episodes. I wanted to DM him when we did Doorways.
Send him a link.
Because he has open DMs on Twitter for whatever fucking reason.
I think you should.
I agree, because Father of the Bride, when I was a kid, my sister and I would watch both of those movies all the fucking time. And so, like, him showing up in all these sort of crappy pilots from the 90s that we weren't aware of, it's just very
bizarre.
Yeah.
It's as bizarre as someone making a sitcom out of Dog Police.
I mean, I literally just thought that he had only ever been in Father of the Bride.
Oh, no. He's been
He's in a ton of shit. Yeah.
He's a working actor.
He's on a TV show now, I believe.
Dirty John.
I'm sorry, George, but that show sounds like fucking dog shit.
Here's some of the titles of the shows that he's on. Same Time Next Christmas. Puppy Star Christmas. Pup Star World Tour. The Super Truck. He's like the guy that you call for your shit project. So the daughter loves Puchinsky. She asks,
what's his name?
Stanley Puchinsky.
That's an excellent name for a dog.
It's the most perfect, like, saying the name of the show line that there could possibly be. So perfectly cheesy.
It is a great dog name. I will give him that. Like, I think a slobbing dog named Stanley, that's pretty great.
That's very good. And then his last name is Puchinsky? Come on.
A human name.
I mean, it's almost like they planned it that way.
It's very suspicious, yeah. Actually.
So he's like, this is my partner's old dog. You know, I'm just taking care of him. And Franny says, oh yeah, I heard that your partner was killed. I read about it, which is really interesting because she didn't note his partner's name. Like, he named his dog after himself.
Yeah, they just say this police officer's partner was killed. Give no name.
Stanley Puchinsky, and this is my dog, Stanley Puchinsky. Very strange. So she invites he and the dog to dinner.
You and Stanley are welcome to join us for dinner.
Really not up to having company right now.
And McKay says he can't because he's a chicken shit, I guess. And while this is going on, Puchinsky is going around them with the leash and, like, pushing them together. And they're, like, nose to nose.
He's just trying to pick his pecker. Let the dog watch.
Oh, yeah.
He really wants to see his partner get laid. Like, that's like a running theme here. Even in the beginning, like, he really wants to help this cop out a whole lot. Or he's a pervert and he wants to hang out in the room when they do it. Like,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like, shouldn't we put your dog in the other room? No. He's fine.
Yeah.
So Puchinsky and McKay get off the elevator, and Puchinsky says,
what's with you, McKay? The baby asks you out for dinner and you make with the excuses. Do I have my work cut out for me?
And then they go into McKay's apartment, and Puchinsky jumps up on the couch and turns on the TV, and Huckleberry Hound is on. McKay turns off the TV, and Puchinsky gets super irritated and says,
don't worry, I'll be out of here as soon as we wrap up this case.
Stone put me on the investigation. He did not mention anything about working with a bulldog.
So I guess the chief gave him back the case? Puchinsky gets really angry and reminds him that,
caught the North Hill Strangler or the post office bomber?
It's really important that we know about those two things, which never pays off at all. And McKay tells him, that's when you were a cop, not a dog. Puchinsky says,
I'm a better cop with four legs than you'll ever be with two.
Okay, that's it.
McKay throws Puchinsky out of the apartment. And Puchinsky goes down the hall and gets on the elevator.
Five, please.
And he asks a guy who's reading a newspaper to press five. He doesn't notice that he's talking to a dog. And again, I think we need to address another issue here. What are the talking animal rules of this show?
Yeah, do other humans hear him or does his partner only hear him? Because he could have very well talked in the when they were in the office, but I guess he just wanted to be a creep.
He was talking and nobody heard him.
Yeah. Oh, he did say a few things. Yeah.
I mean, you'd think like his coworkers would be like, whoa, I just heard the dead guy's voice. What's going on?
The dude in the elevator does hint that he, you know, like, hey, there's someone in here. Like, you know, he's got like a...
Yeah, he totally hears him.
Yeah. And Puchinsky hear other dogs or communicate to other dogs, right? Like,
that's a good
those point. Are the questions I kind of had. Like, is he telepathically speaking to other cats and dogs? Time.
It's like Mr. Ed rules, where like Puchinsky chooses to only talk to McKay, but he can talk to anyone else if it's and you know, if I were McKay, I would quit the police force and go public with the talking dog. And also, it seems like given what we know about Puchinsky, he would want to do that as well. Instead of Puchinsky being so caught up about finding his killer, they should go on the road and become millionaires with the talking dog act.
You get the pension, you know? That's what it's all about.
Or even better, he could sell Puchinsky to a scientist. And then he would be rid of him.
Why still be a cop when you can do pretty much anything other than that right now?
He's going out of his way to like hide this talking dog, and there isn't a clear reason
why. About the pension?
We cut to an establishing shot of the apartment building at the same time of day. You know, not sure why we were already in the apartment building. And McKay hears the doorbell and he opens and it's Franny and Katie and Puchinsky and they have grocery bags. And Puchinsky runs in. Apparently he scratched at their door and they brought him back. And Katie says,
"Bet you're happy Stanley's home."
"Oh, I thought I'd never see him again."
"Look, I know this is a little forward, but I just couldn't stand the thought of you sitting here eating peanut butter and Alpo."
So is the dog eating peanut butter and Alpo, or is McKay eating peanut butter and Alpo? They're just splitting a big dish, just eating a big dog bowl of peanut butter and Alpo together.
Maybe you don't make a lot of money as a cop in Chicago. That's what they got to settle for.
That's all we got, kid. We got peanut butter and Alpo.
I mean, this apartment, though, is huge. So
yeah,
he's actually doing pretty well. Another thing I want to point out is this apartment is like an M.C. Escher painting.
I didn't notice that.
There are a lot of doors. A lot of doors in this apartment.
Yeah,
he's got three bathrooms on the first floor alone.
Yeah. Normally, kitchens don't have like full doors like this. You know, usually a kitchen has like maybe a swinging door or like, you know, the saloon doors or just doesn't have a door at all. But this kitchen has like, it's like a bedroom door that you can open and close.
That is really weird.
And the other weird thing is that in the kitchen, there's a full wall of windows and it's on the wall that it shares with the living room.
I didn't notice that either. But...
So they go into the kitchen and McKay shuts the door and then this chaotic jazz music starts playing and McKay runs over to Puchinsky and
"You're pretty smart, don't you?"
"Yeah, looks and brains.
You know, well, you're just lucky they're here."
"That's the thanks I get? I'm doing you a favor. I mean, you don't need my nose to pick up the scent that this babe wants you bad."
And it's like, yeah, what is your problem, man?
Puchinsky's a good wingman.
He really is.
I mean, he's doing everything he can to get this guy some attention. It's kind of weird that he's not going for it. She's literally in his house, like cooking him dinner, and he's too shy to even strike up a conversation with her.
She invited him to dinner, and then when he didn't want to come, she just shows up to cook him dinner. I mean, does he not like his daughter? Does he not? He's not into kids? Is that the problem?
Yeah, the signs are pretty obvious. I don't know.
McKay runs back into the kitchen while Puchinsky goes over to the stereo and finds his theme song that just happens to be on the radio. They hear it in the kitchen, and then McKay runs out of the kitchen, closing the door behind him. He grabs Puchinsky, to which Puchinsky says,
"Hey, dummy, not me. Grab the bee."
He throws the dog into the bedroom and shuts the door, and Puchinsky starts growling and barking, and then McKay runs back into the kitchen, closing the door behind him, and Katie says,
"Maybe you should let Stanley out of there.
He'll be quiet soon. See?"
Then there's like this crash and a breaking sound. And McKay runs out of the kitchen, closes the door behind him. He runs across the living room to the bedroom, opens the door, and Puchinsky is destroying the bed.
Well, if he's not going to use it, he doesn't have it.
Yeah, no
kidding. Very good point.
Again, what are the talking dog rules here? Like, why is McKay going out of his way and embarrassing himself to not reveal that Puchinsky is a talking dog?
He's just there to torment his partner. It feels like his existence now is either helping him or just making his life miserable. Because those sheets look pretty expensive. The whole bed set looked really nice. He fucking destroyed it.
Back in 1990, let me tell you, Jason, that whole set cost $7. Yeah. He's living off of a modest policeman's salary of $9 million a year.
They could have spent 10 and made it a waterbed, at least. Make it a really 90s bed.
Oh my God.
So he goes into the bedroom, closing the door behind him, and it sounds like they're having like a wrestling match. And Franny knocks on the door, and McKay opens the door.
Is everything okay in here?
Fine, just training the dog.
And he's holding a revolver for some reason.
And Franny does not talk about the revolver, like, or anything. She's just kind of...
She's a little shocked by it. And he's like, he just kind of hides it. But I don't know, is he like shooting the dog? Like, what was he? Why was he holding a gun?
I think if I saw someone with a gun and they were hiding it, I would say, hey, are you hiding a gun?
I gotta go.
Yeah. This dinner is
I'm gonna take my daughter and go home.
She just walks in and he's got the fucking gun in the dog's mouth.
It's like the cover of National Lampoon.
Yeah. Sleep with this cop or I'll kill this dog.
So she asks, is everything all right? And McKay is like, everything is fine. And he closes the door. Meanwhile, Puchinsky has locked himself in the bath. And McKay, like, kind of sinks to the floor. And he says, I'm sorry.
I flew off the handle. I should be more sympathetic. Try and understand. I've lost a partner. And now he's back. And then Franny's here. Look, I've never had a dog before.
And he hasn't really flown off the handle. Like, Puchinsky is totally gaslighting. He's actually taking the situation pretty well, to be honest. So the bathroom door opens, and then somehow Puchinsky has managed to unlock the door, open the door, jump up on the sink, and then face the opposite direction in a quarter of a second. This is like an example of Puchinsky's teleporting abilities. So it finally get a scene where Puchinsky is running his situation.
Look at me. I've become a dog. It's all sinking in now. I mean, I used to have hair on my back, but this is ridiculous. Lost a lot. My identity, my home, my Claire.
Quit feeling sorry for yourself. You got a lot to be thankful for. You got yourself a roommate and a friend.
And then he tries to pet Puchinsky, and Puchinsky's like, hey, no homo.
Yeah, get a cat for that. Don't touch your partner like that. Seeing that, it just the mood changed very quickly from, hey, your dog is destroying my bed, to, oh my God, I'm having an existential crisis. And I can't believe I know a dog and my life will be meaningless at this point. I won't enjoy the pleasures of life. Even though he still does, and he gets away with womanizing.
He's having the time of his life.
Yeah.
But I am glad that we had this scene, because up until this point, I was like, is he even bothered by the fact that he's like a dog now? So, I am glad that they finally like had this scene where he's like, oh, fuck, I'm a dog, you know? Like,
yeah, you needed that monologue from him to like make it feel real for a minute.
It's very touching, but it's also extremely disturbing at the same time. We cut. I guess we don't get the dinner scene at all. We cut to a few days later, maybe?
Yep.
It's not really clear. Maybe this would make more sense if there were commercials cutting this up. Or, you know, maybe it would feel like the pace would feel different. But anyway, McKay is walking down the street and he finds Puchinsky sitting under some newspaper machine.
You've been here all night, every night for a week. Let's go home.
If avenging my death means nothing to you, then run along. Who needs you?
You're still upset about that rabies shot, aren't you?
So at that moment, Puchinsky says,
we got a man.
How do you know?
Can't you smell him?
And around the corner, we see a guy in a blue shirt robbing an old lady at the ATM. And McKay runs around the corner, pulls his gun, and starts chasing him. We see Paczynski running up some stairs, and McKay corners the guy in an alley. And Paczynski is like above them on a wall. The criminal kicks the gun out of McKay's hand and punches him to the ground. And then Paczynski yells, jumps, and lands on top of the criminal. Paczynski knocks the criminal down, and McKay tackles him, and then Paczynski just bites the shit out of the guy's crotch.
This made me laugh. Okay, this part was very funny.
And I mean, he really goes for it. He's just like biting the shit out of that guy, and the guy is screaming in pain. And then McKay punches him in the face. Knocks him out. Oh. And then Paczynski says,
I'll have you know I did not enjoy that.
Yeah, no homo, bro. No homo.
He could have bit anywhere, but he decided to bite there. You know, he could have bit the leg, the arm, but he decided to bite his ball.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. So then we cut to a framed picture of the chief and McKay and Paczynski, and they're all wearing medals around their neck. The picture's sitting on a coffee table because that's where most people keep their framed pictures, like on a coffee table facing the TV. And that's all we get. I kind of wish we could have learned more about the person who killed Paczynski.
Yeah.
I did feel like the show was going to move to more of a odd couple relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
Towards the end. And it was going to discard any of findings of that killer. I guess they found him, but he's like the nemesis or something, you know? Paczynski needs someone to fight.
Yeah, the criminal, he has no lines. They just keep nailing that. Northside Strangler and Post Office Bomber.
Who caught the North Hill Strangler? Who caught the Post Office Bomber?
It should have been some sort of like revenge for that.
Yeah, it felt very arbitrary. Like, here's this guy that happened to kill Paczynski while running him over, trying to get away, you know? It's not like...
Yeah, like, that scene is just kind of tagged on, you know?
So, would you have liked to have seen something where, like, the Northside Strangler was, like, locked up, like, in Arkham, and he's, like, Paczynski's Joker? He, like, goes to visit him to get, like, clues about who killed him?
Or... You know, it could have been that's like the driving plot for the whole series, is that they're trying to solve this murder. You know, like, there's a lot of shows that are like that, where they're just trying to find this guy, you know, the one-armed man.
That could have been like 10 episodes of a season right there, just trying to capture the killer.
Trying to find him, trying to solve the mystery.
I think we need to rewrite Paczynski. I think that we need to do a dark, gritty reboot. I could not possibly be more fucking tired of dark, gritty reboots. Every single day that I see some new reboot, it's like, have you thought about this? But what if it was gritty? Well, we made it for you, and it's coming to HBO. Gritty, and it's gonna have like a pop song, but it's reimagined with like slow strings or slow piano.
Maybe one of our listeners out there can like create us an image or something of like a dark, gritty Paczynski. We'll throw it up on our website that gets so much traffic.
It's the dog, but he has Joker tattoos from Suicide Squad and like gold teeth.
He's got the Disturbed right in the middle of his forehead, just so that we understand that the Joker is Disturbed.
You want to know how I got these bones?
Do you want to know how I got this tattoo? I went to a tattoo parlor and tattooed it on my forehead.
A tattoo parlor that will fucking tattoo a dog.
And it's not because we got it spayed.
Yeah.
All right. So McKay and Paczynski are sitting on a couch and they're watching TV and they're eating popcorn. And Paczynski just like buries his face in the bowl of popcorn and it goes everywhere. And then McKay sees this and just starts spitting out it's popcorn that he's eating.
Yeah, it's nasty immediately.
Like he didn't notice it before.
And then Paczynski changes the channel to a horse race and says he's betting on horses now.
It's the ninth race from Arlington. I got some money riding on it.
Like, how does that work? The bookie allows dogs to place bets?
Maybe he phoned it in or something so they didn't see him.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Just like like Mr. Ed, where he calls the operator and he's like,
"Hello, operator."
"Yes, this is the operator."
"Hi, honey. What's new around the phone company?"
"I beg your pardon, sir."
Yeah, Mr. Ed used to love to bet on the dog races.
We could have had a crossover episode if both these shows were in the same timeline.
Oh shit! Yeah, we have the Mr. Ed reboot that we still need to do.
"That's crazy talk, Wilbur. Horses can't use phones."
So they get into this argument about what they're going to watch, and Puchinsky says he's going to go chew up his loafers.
"Loafers, my favorite."
And they chase each other around the couch, and we zoom out, and we get a shot of their apartment window, and that's it. Cut to credits. And that's Puchinsky. So what are our closing thoughts here?
I want more. I want an exploration into the mechanics of two souls, a disgusting pig chop man and a dog inhabiting the same body and fighting for control.
Oh, yeah. He's like conflicted inside of him.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved to have seen more. I think this is great, considering the, what we did get in 1990.
What did we get in 1990?
The number one show on the night that Puchinsky aired was the MLB All-Star Game.
Dang.
Cheers was number two. The Simpsons was number three. Cosby Show was four. Roseanne was five. Number six was Love and Hate.
What?
Not sure what that is.
Don't know.
Tied for seventh place was Different World, and then I guess another MLB All-Star Game.
Well, one would have been the Home Run Derby, and one would have been the game. You know who would have been in that? The patron saint of this show, what? Kirby Puckett. And he's only the patron saint because he had a very silly name. Unfortunately, he's passed on.
R.I.P.
Yeah, Kirby Puckett fucking ruled.
And in ninth place was Designing Women.
There we go. Full circle.
George Newbern could have been on two channels at the same time.
What channel was Designing Women on?
CBS. Say what you will about George Newbern, man. He was everywhere.
I think for me with Puchinsky, I think I would want three seasons and a movie. Just to throw it out there. And we get a full exploration of this character and how Puchinsky operates in the real world. Like, I want to see Puchinsky, like, do his taxes or, like, you know, go on a date with a human. Not even another date.
I want to see an ending to Puchinsky exactly like the end of the television series of Evangelion, where the dog is sitting in a metal folding chair contemplating what it is to be human and for an hour.
Yep.
And then it ends with just everyone else from the show standing around him and clapping and saying, "Congratulations." A single tear for what could have been.
Dog police.
They're coming out everywhere. Dog police.
Dog police. They're gonna come in your hair. Dog police.